Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, on this bright October day. Before we begin our episode, I'd like to just take a moment and tell all our listeners and friends out there in Florida that we're thinking of them and we're praying they stay safe from the hurricane. Speaking about hurricanes, I'm excited to bring a new topic to today's show that is directly on point with everything that we are bombarded with when we turn on our TVs or load up our computers and get onto social media. It's political bias. My name is Laura Alley. I'm the president of Triple Wind Sales, headquartered in Chatham, New Jersey, and I'm very excited to bring to you two of our favorite guests, Catherine Nuck Freeman and Suzanne Serra, the founders and owners of Shift HR Compliance, also headquartered in Chatham, New Jersey. Welcome back to the show, Catherine and Suzanne. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks, Laura. We're looking forward to this discussion. It's near and dear to both of our hearts.
I know. It's a good one. I was excited that you guys wanted to do an episode on this because I feel like every time I turn on my computer, my gut reaction is, oh, my God, did that person just write that or say that? And I think you would agree this election is just like none other in memory, at least not in my memory, and it's creating some very angry dialogue on social media. Are any of your clients having issues with this related to these political discussions, whether they're online or at the water cooler or in the workplace? Has anybody brought any of this to your attention?
Yeah, we're definitely starting to hear many questions from clients in terms of what kind of conversation, how far can we let conversations about politics go in our office? Should we be concerned about this? What really should we be doing about it? And there's a whole host of issues that relate to this year's political election as it is. And you know, as you know, we're employment lawyers. We're constantly advising our clients on how to make sure that they're not allowing any type of discriminatory conversations to go on in the workplace or harassing conversations that might create a hostile work environment for their employees. And you know, issues such as race relations and nationality and gender issues and all that are all part of this year's election. So it's really a recipe for disaster if the conversation takes a turn in the workplace.
Yeah, it's very challenging, I think, because it's not only what people are saying, but it's body language. Like, if you're in a conversation, I mean, I think because I'm out there and I'm always talking to a million people every day, you definitely could see things tighten up when a conversation gets on politics. And people make faces, they have body language, and I just find that it adds to a little bit of uncomfortableness around the work environment. Do you think that's a problem, or what are some other problems do you think that can arise when employees are engaging in this type of dialogue at work?
Well, I think you raise a really interesting point here because you're really relying in large part on your employees to have good emotional intelligence and to read the cues that are being given to them by their coworkers. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, even clients. We've heard stories of people saying things that offend clients, and you know, you definitely don't mm-hmm. want to be doing that either. So it's really, really difficult because you have to be sensitive to how people are responding to what you're saying, which is always a challenge in any issues that relate to workplace behavior and workplace harassment. And, you know, where we see the biggest problems are where people are not sensitive to how they're landing on other people. So I think with the election, people are so ultra sensitive to it, you really have to be even more careful about what you're saying and, you know, be on the lookout for how people are responding to it. And obviously the things that as employment lawyers we're most concerned about is when people make comments that relate to some of the most divisive issues in the election, like, you know, the candidate's stance on immigration reform or border control. People could say some, you know, really hurtful things that not only negatively impact the workplace culture, but could also create potential claims for national origin discrimination. You know, likewise, if somebody's sharing opinions about gender issues that border on being sexist, again, negatively impacts workplace culture, but also can create liability for the employee and the company if it goes too far.
And it's interesting, Laura, because many times when we're dealing with issues related to harassment and discrimination, you're talking about things that have actually occurred in the workplace, statements that are made that might be considered derogatory or discriminatory. But the interesting thing about this election is that if you have a manager who under employment laws in New Jersey and other states is held to a higher standard. You could have employees who, even if that manager doesn't say anything other than the fact that they're voting for one of the candidates, for example, they're voting for Trump, you could have employees perceive that manager to be somebody who doesn't support their nationality or their race or their gender. And since managers are held to a higher standard, that becomes problematic even if the manager hasn't said anything discriminatory or harassing in any way. So it's one of those areas where employers need to be careful, managers need to be careful, and then, you know, your coworkers and employees throughout the organization also need to be cautious as well.
And I think you just brought up a good point, because it's not only what people are saying in their water cooler conversations or even talking about who they're voting for, but there's a lot of other like displays of what they're thinking or how they're feeling that aren't coming out of their mouth. Like they're screensavers or some kind of sticker on their outside of their iPad. Or for me, even, I find that I see some emails that come across in these blind email. I don't even know how I get on these lists sometimes. And I'm just like, please, please do not clog up my email, especially my work email. Like, I just find that all of that really kind of takes you aback. And even if it's not something coming out of somebody's mouth, it still could be something that makes someone feel uncomfortable. Do you think that's true? Or are there other examples that you could think of perhaps that might, you know, maybe put a company into a situation where they might be at potential risk for some type of allegation or accusation?
It's a great question about some of the nonverbal stuff. And here, you know, with the political paraphernalia, the buttons and the hats and the shirts and the stickers that people might want to display. I mean, the good thing for companies is that you can, if you have a policy in your handbook or you have a general practice of not allowing people to say, for example, solicit in your workplace, you could prevent, as long as you apply it uniformly, you could prevent people from making any kind of like political solicitations. You know, heaven forbid you have like your manager sending you campaign requests for their favorite candidate. That's definitely something you'd want to avoid. You could also, and a lot of companies do, have dress code policies that would, you know, require a professional environment, in a professional environment, that you not be wearing graphic T-shirts, not wearing hats in the workplace. And again, if it's, we suggest that stuff be applied uniformly, in which case the company could, you know, technically keep that stuff out of the workplace. I personally find it very divisive, and I think Catherine made a really important point. I think it's even more important that the managers not walk in wearing, you know, Hillary for president or Make America Great Again, either one, because I think no matter, you know, they're obviously going to put somebody off. So I think it's really important that you try to, that managers in particular be sensitive to that. There's no question in my mind that we're going to see in the next, you know, 6 months to 9 months, some of this stuff showing up in lawsuits.
Yeah, Suzanne raises a good point there. You know, what we found after September 11th, 2001, was that the number of charges that were filed with the EEOC rose dramatically as it related to national origin claims, because people were talking about 9/11, were talking about terrorism, were talking about bombing certain countries, and employees felt, because of these workplace discussions, that they were working in a hostile work environment. So the same thing could be happening here, where people are talking about politics, talking about the platforms of each of the candidates, and viewing some of them as hostile to them based on their national origin, their race, their sex, et cetera. We may end up seeing, as Suzanne says, more charges or lawsuits coming that really relate back to these conversations in the workplace.
And I think an important point we can make for the listeners, Laura, is that, you know, if you're in a private place of employment, the public sector is a little bit different, because with public employers, there could be potential constitutional First Amendment protections. But for the private employers, they really need to be vigilant to make sure that if people are talking about politics in the workplace, that it doesn't get a pass because people are expressing their political views. If people are saying things that are negative about somebody's racial, you know, race or national origin, or making gender-based comments, like say about Hillary Clinton, those things need to be treated as aggressively as if, you know, it didn't relate to politics. So really, the employers need to be vigilant that none of these discussions are going in a direction that would violate their harassment policy. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that in advocating for your position about one of your candidates' platforms, that because the issues are so divisive, that there are things that could be said that could be really problematic. And that applies, you know, not only at sitting at your desk or your cubicle, but if you're sitting in the lunchroom, you know, the workplace extends beyond just sitting at a meeting or at your desk.
And I actually had that question come up during a training I was conducting this week, where someone said, well, what if I go out with some colleagues, maybe a manager or two, for drinks after work, but the company doesn't pick up the tab and we're not talking about business? Can we then relax our standards and have an open conversation? And the bottom line is, unfortunately, you can't, because if a manager says something that offends somebody based on their national origin, their sex, or any other protected category, just because it's over a beer at a bar, doesn't mean that that person who's offended, if they're later angry enough to lash out and file a lawsuit against the company, doesn't mean they're not going to include that very sentence or statement in their complaint. And then it's, you know, if a case barrels towards trial, it's up to a judge to decide whether the information should be considered by a jury or not. So, again, especially when you're in that management role, you need to err on the side of caution in terms of what you say, regardless of whether you're in the office, in your office, in the lunchroom, or out after work.
All right. Those are some great pieces of advice, because I don't think most people realize that, Catherine, that what goes on outside the immediate office cubicle is also something that could be taken into consideration if someone were to file a potential harassment claim. So I think that is really good advice. Also, what you said, Suzanne, about the private business owner having to be extra diligent, and you know, the whole need for emotional intelligence around their employees. We could actually do another session just on that, I think,
yeah,
which would be great. But
maybe five.
Something that happened at the debate caught my ear, and it probably caught yours too, is when Hillary Clinton mentioned the need, or the potential need, or the potential desire, I should say, to offer bias training to the police, force out there. Did you guys pick up on that?
We definitely did, and actually we had a meeting on it the very next day, because as you know, Laura, our online compliance training company, one of our most popular online courses is unconscious bias awareness. And we see so many companies, whether they're in technology or finance or insurance, et cetera, who are really trying to bring that into their workplaces to raise the issue of implicit bias amongst their workforces. So when Hillary referenced it as it relates to police departments, you know, we're obviously in complete support of that for police departments and any other employer, because it's the fact of the matter is thousands of studies show that implicit bias does exist. And one of the only first steps towards combating it is really becoming aware that it does exist and aware of your own biases, so you can take steps to slow down your thought processes, especially as it relates to the workplace and decisions you make there.
Yeah, and Laura, it was interesting because some of the commentators later were questioning or challenging her statement that, you know, we all have implicit bias, but the research shows that we all have implicit bias. And so,
oh, sure,
you know, it's
absolutely
become front and center because of what's happening with the, you know, the police, the incidents with the police, but Shift and, you know, and the people at Shift have been working on trying to combat this in the workplace for a while, and so we're actually thrilled that the topic has gotten you know, some more transparency and some more attention, because we think it's the next line in terms of really trying to change workplace behavior.
I couldn't agree with you more. So we know what the problem is. We talked about some of the challenging issues that business owners are probably going to be faced with over the next 6 to 9 months. But what do you think proactively a leader can do to stop this from affecting the productivity or prevent them from destroying the synergy that they've probably taken years to create between colleagues? I know business owners that I work with often spend a lot of money on team development, team bonding, leadership development, and to have a climate like this that we're all unfortunately kind of thrown into, it would be a shame to reduce the positive effects of all those years of all the good stuff that's been going on. What do you think a leader can do to help with this? What would be your best advice, I should ask?
Well, you're right. I mean, you don't want to destroy positive energy, but the fact of the matter is so many of these political discussions result in negative feelings and negative emotions. So, you'd want to focus on that aspect of it. You know, I can tell you most of our instructor-led training programs, we coach managers to really refrain from these discussions in the workplace, and we really open their eyes to the whys of it, how you could be unintentionally making somebody feel as though they're in an uncomfortable work environment when topics end up relating to nationality and gender and that sort of thing. You can't really impose an outright ban against these conversations, especially if they relate to working conditions that might result as a result of whichever party may be elected, but you can give it a little bit more structure.
Yeah, and again, to be right. vigilant, I agree with Catherine 100%, to really discourage managers from talking about it, or, you know, if they're going to talk about it, to just be very aware of how what they're saying and how people might perceive it, and then really to be vigilant that none of the conversations are getting into areas that could violate the company's anti-harassment policy, or laws, in particular, if people start talking about things like immigration, border control, gender issues, race issues, to treat them exactly like you would treat them if there wasn't, you know, a political, highly charged political election going on. I think people just need to be more vigilant right now about kind of listening to what people are saying and, you know, to really address it head on if they think it's having a negative impact. And even if it's having a negative impact from a culture perspective, you know, talk about it and discuss it. But I do think it's important to try to discourage managers from engaging in the dialogue.
So how does your training help? Do you have specific training modules or practices that deal with political bias? Or what can you offer our listeners out there as a path to support and help them with this very tricky subject?
Well, Laura, as I mentioned, we do have training that addresses the essential issue of unconscious bias awareness, and it covers many different subjects of bias. And then we create, you know, realistic settings where employees and managers find themselves throughout. So really doing some type of training, whether it's unconscious bias awareness, whether it's preventing harassment and discrimination, online or instructor-led, they'll all address it in one way or another.
Yeah, and they all, I think, all of our training, in addition to providing the legal background and kind of the, you know, what's allowed and what's not, they all are geared to raise awareness in the workplace about how what you say and do lands on the people who you're working with. And so I think, you know, the more educated people are about how their statements or their T-shirts or their bumper stickers might impact somebody else, and the fact that, you know, look, even if there's ultimately not liability, people are offended and leave, they could bring claims. So our training addresses all of those things. And again, it's really the raising of awareness about kind of being the emotionally intelligent manager and coworker.
Excellent. So thank you so much to both of you for spending this time with us this morning. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you or find out more information on your suite of training products?
The best way to get in touch with us is to go to our website, www.shiftelt.com. You'll find out about upcoming webinars that are complimentary that we offer, and a number of interesting articles which are also helpful as well.
And our website contains a library of all of our courses, and if the listeners are interested in doing a quick demo, there's a short demo to get the look and feel of our training, which, you know, we're extremely proud of.
Excellent. And also to our listeners, if you want to get in touch with me, send me a message or add a comment to our broadcast, and I'll be happy to connect you with Catherine and Suzanne directly. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to everyone out there listening to today's show. Catherine and Suzanne, I wish you guys a great weekend, and thank you again for coming on to another fabulous episode. You guys are always great to have on the show.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks,
you
Laura.
Too. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Have a great one.